This is the 18th of March 2014. Right. The British Parliament was approached by the Movement for the Care of Children from Germany if they could hasten the travel permits. The movement promised to fund the whole of the operation and stated there would not be a drain on the public purse. The funds were to be found to guarantee £50, roughly £1,000 in today's money, for every child brought to this country by kinder transport. By the time the war started in September 39, it is estimated that 10,000 children were brought to safety in this country. Therefore, a very generous British public donated the sum of £500,000, equivalent to approximately £10 million in today's money. Considering that the average wage at that time was under £3 per week, this was a truly momentous fundraising exercise. Now you can understand why I entitled this talk, Kinder Britain's Generosity. Many of the children who came over with kinder transport have a story to tell, but I tell the story of one such child, me, it's the story I know best. I was born in the town of Chemnitz in southeast Germany. I do not recollect my very early years, but in 1933 my father lost his job in Chemnitz and we moved to a small town called Neukirchen, about 5 miles from Chemnitz. My parents bought a semi-detached house with a large piece of ground attached, probably at 1.5 acres. As I remember, my father took on any type of work available, driving, painting, road building, etc., and life for my sister and I was quite normal. Our household consisted of my paternal grandfather, my father, my mother, my sister and myself. In our piece of ground, we kept a goat which supplied milk, we kept hens which supplied the eggs, and while my father was working, my mother and grandfather worked on our land. We grew our own vegetables and had an orchard with various fruit trees. Below our house was a deep cellar, and I can remember my mother storing the apples and pears in the cellar for winter use. Although my grandfather was Jewish, I cannot remember him attending any Jewish religious service. My father was also Jewish, but my mother was of the Lutheran faith, and my sister and I were brought up also in the Lutheran faith. We were regular attendees at the church every Sunday, but unfortunately, because of my father's Jewish background, the whole family was classified as Jewish by the Nazi regime, even though my mother had never embraced the Jewish religion. At 5 years old, I went to local school and never experienced any feeling of being an outsider. I played with the lads of my own age, they came to my house to play and I went to theirs. I may be wrong, but I think we were the only Jewish family in the town and no one appeared to bother. One day we came home from school to find my father gone. My mother didn't know where he had gone to, and about 2 or 3 months later he appeared again. Only then did my sister and I find out that he had been away to Buchenwald concentration camp. Why, we did not know. On reflection, and on information gathered during research for this talk, it seems possible my father was one of the many Jews who had been rounded up during Kristallnacht. Not long after my father returned, my sister and I were told we would be going on a journey. My mother packed a suitcase for each of us, and we were taken to the railway station to be put in a train. I'm not sure where we joined the train, and to this day I have never found out. Unfortunately, there's a complete blank from the time we were put in the train until we arrived at the Priory in Selkirk. I've been told since this is possibly the only way a child of 8 years old could cope with the trauma of this upheaval. To suddenly be torn from a happy, comfortable family life with loving parents, put on a train to nowhere, and end up in a country where no one spoke my language except the other children travelled with me, must have been a severe shock to a young child. I know we landed at Harwich on the 16th of March 1939 because that is the date stamp on my Kinderausweis, the travel permit used by the Burgermeister of Neukirchen on 13th March 1939. That same permit also described me as Staatenlos, which means stateless. Germany had got rid of me and didn't want me back. After some weeks at the Priory at Selkirk, my sister and I packed our belongings and went on another train journey accompanied by two ladies from the refugee movement. We eventually arrived at the station at Forres, Murrayshire. We didn't know it, but we were to be placed with the family Mackenzie. We found out many years later that the Mackenzie family had originally applied to take refugees from the Spanish Civil War. And being told these had all been allocated to families, and there were child refugees from Germany looking for accommodation, they agreed to take my sister and I, as my mother had asked if possible we should be kept together. On arrival at Forest, two strange occurrences took place which have never been explained. On getting off the train, I walked through all the people on the platform straight over to Agnes Mackenzie, one of the daughters of the family. No one in the family had ever been to Selkirk, and yet I somehow knew that this was the person who had come to meet us. The second strange thing that happened was also puzzling. Mr. Mackenzie had a car to take us to his home. On arriving, the car stopped outside a small shop with a gate on either side leading into gardens. When I stepped out of the car, I did not try to enter any of these two gates, but walked approximately 50 or 60 yards up the road and entered the correct gate of Mr. Mackenzie's house. How I knew which gate to enter, I still have no idea. Once the war started, we were only allowed to write 25 words per month through the Red Cross. When war broke out, Janet joined the Land Army and Jessie looked after the house. So over the years, one can say that Jessie virtually brought us up. Granny Mackenzie died and then my sister and I moved into the big house and we were accepted as part of the family. Mr. Mackenzie arranged for us to attend the local school. He asked the headmaster if it would be possible to have 2 or 3 hours a week with the German class so we could keep up our German language, but the headmaster refused. So the German language faded away for lack of use. When I moved to secondary school, I decided to take German as a language, and I'm sorry to say I ended up bottom of the class. Mockery all round from the other members of the class. But the following year I got my own back by coming first in my class in English. After leaving school I started my apprenticeship with a local electrical contractor. In 1948 the Refugee Council, who were my legal guardians, decided to move me to Glasgow. By this time Agnes and Janet were both married, Jessie was about to get married, and Mr. Mackenzie was going to move to Motherwell to live with Janet and her husband. I couldn't find the firm to complete my electrical apprenticeship in the Glasgow area, so I started my apprenticeship all over again in a shipyard in Renfrew as a mechanical engineer. After about a year, I went for an interview with an electrical contractor in Paisley and was accepted to complete my electrical apprenticeship. It was during this time that I was given the chance to apply for British citizenship. I applied in March 1949 and my citizenship was finally authorised in February 1950. Once that was approved, I decided to change my name as well. My name was Rosenberg, Mount of Roses, and the Scottish equivalent would have been Montrose. But after the kindness shown to my sister and I over the past years, I decided to thank Mr. Mackenzie by adopting his name, as he had no sons of his own to carry his name forward. After the war, we were overjoyed to discover my parents had survived the war. My father and grandfather had both been taken away to concentration camps, and although my father survived, unfortunately my grandfather did not. My parents had been ejected from their home, and my mother survived the war living with friends and relations. At the end of the war, the Russian forces controlled the area where my parents lived, and when the authorities discovered that my parents had been ejected, they in turn ejected the German family who had moved in, and the house was restored to my parents. My father tried to persuade me to come back to Germany, but after being used to the freedom in this country and hearing of the tightly controlled way of life under the communist regime, we decided not to return to Germany. Being in the Russian zone, my parents were not allowed to travel to the West. By this time I'd met my future wife and we got married in November 1952. Shortly after this, I was called up for national service. I went into the RAF in Marie Quarters and decided, why? My mother, we got a letter from my mother saying she was coming to visit us in the Marie Quarters. And we went down to Kidderminster to meet her at the train, and we sat there for about a couple of hours, still nobody there. And we came back to the camp, and next door to us in the quarters was a sergeant who was married to a German woman who was interested in meeting my mother. When we returned home, neighbour asked us in for a cup of coffee and we talked about what could have happened to my mother. And then there was a knock at the door, and a gentleman asked if anyone knew where the people next door were, as the lady was wanting to see them. It turned out to be my mother. Someone in the train had told her it'd be better getting off at Bridgnorth instead of Kidderminster. She didn't realise that we were waiting at Kidderminster. So she got off the train, no idea how to get there, made a few questions in her whole thing English, and started to walk it, not realising it was 3 miles to the camp. A December day. Anyway, this gentleman stopped and got her up the house, and that's when we took her next door, and I raked up the fire after damping it down, and the chimney went up on fire. So, as I said, the RAF Marie Quarters have an RAF fire service, and their idea of a chimney fire is ladder against the roof, hose down the chimney, turn on the water. It's very effective, but as you can imagine, the mess down below. So after we started to clean up, my wife was going to help. My mother said, no, sits and do, you know, sit down. And her and I, after, well, it must have been 17, 18 years since we'd seen each other, spent our first hour together on hands and knees on the floor cleaning up the mess. What a reunion. Anyway, after we cleared up the mess there, we asked how on earth she'd managed to get out, and that's when she explained. Now, I think it was, who was it went to see? Oh, permission to visit her brother in Cologne. She got permission from the Russian authorities to visit her brother, and when she went there, he took her up to the Burgermeister. And as I say, the Burgermeister there issues the passports, so he gave her a West German passport, took her East German passport, and said, when do you come back? Give me back the West German passport, I'll give you back the East German passport, and no one's any the wiser, and that's what happened. But as I say, we got her home up north, took some meet some of the family, and meet my sister in Glasgow. But she wouldn't take any photos home with her. And it was, I think it was fear of the authorities. The travel restrictions were so tight, you know. And eventually, well, many years later, as we go, I'll come to it later, many years later, my father did manage to come out. But to carry on with the story, after 3 years in the forces, I was demobbed and found it difficult to settle down. I had several jobs and joined the government service. We were right and regular to my parents, and in 56, my wife and I decided we should go and visit the parents with my first grandchild. We reckoned as they'd missed out on their own children growing up, they should at least see their grandchildren. The arrangement was made, and money was tight, the most economical form of transport was to go by train. So my wife went first to stay with my sister in Blackpool, and my sister accompanied her to London, and from there it was by train to Dover and the ferry, and by train to Cologne, where she spent the night with friends of my parents. The following day, on the train again to Magdeburg, on the border between East and West Germany, where my father met her. He worked for the railways in East Germany. Well, you think it was quite a journey with an 18-month-old child and a woman on her own. You know, they weren't quite so sophisticated as they are nowadays, you know. And my wife and son stayed for a period of 6 weeks. When she came back and told me about the restrictions imposed over there, I was glad I'd not gone back home after war as my father had wanted. On arrival at my parents' house, she had to sign the book in the house, listing all the visitors, then go to the police station to register her arrival and inform them of her length of stay. And my parents told her to be sure to keep sufficient English money to pay for her exit visa, as you could not pay for that in German money.
And why did you decide not to go with her?
Well, I couldn't go because I was wanting the government service, and the work I was doing was restricted. You know, security was quite high. And then, of course, they were in the Russian zone, so there was no way I could go to a communist country working for the British government.
Right.
And there was also the other fault was the possibility they were looking for technical personnel. If I'd gone there, I might never get back out again.
But you were a British citizen by that time.
Only in the British Commonwealth. If you go back to your country of birth, right? Never mind the said Mackinder House was starting loss. As far as the Russians were concerned, they won the war, built it tape. He's a German, he stays here, right? That was it. So the British citizenship, I mean, it tells you on the documentation I've got, it's valid, except in the country of my birth.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you see? So you've got to be careful with these little, all these little quirks upset you, you know? Anyway, While living in Beath in Ayrshire, we got word my father had retired and his travel restrictions no longer applied. So in the summer of 58, my mother and father came to visit us. It was only now that my mother told my father she'd be to see us. At first he wouldn't believe it, but when he saw the photos of us together, he had no choice, he had to believe it, you know. The reason my mother had not told him was she was so frightened it would slip out accidentally and they would both be punished for breaking the travel regulations imposed by the East German authorities. That was the last time I saw my parents. As a government employee with a high security clearance, I was not permitted to travel to a communist-controlled country, and both my parents passed away in 68. In 74, my wife and I took our first trip back to the country of my birth. Due to my government service, it was impossible for us to cross over to communist-controlled East Germany to visit the home I was brought up in. We toured West Germany, calling on friends stationed there in the forces, and prior to going over, we had been in touch with my mother's sister, who was governess in Dresden. She was a childminder, as good an explanation as any. A painter there, a widower, had seven children, she looked after them. Now, during the working days, she'd been housekeeper and nanny for a widower of seven children, now living in Rendsburg. And one of the children, Maria, was now living in Rendsburg in West Germany. So it was arranged that we would go up to Rendsburg and visit Maria, and my aunt would go from East Germany to visit Maria, a good excuse, one of my children, you know. When we arrived in Rendsburg, we found that Aunt Gertrude was waiting for us. And that was our first meeting in 35 years. Just imagine, you know. At great risk to herself, she'd smuggled out my father's watch to bring to me. This was a watch that my grandfather had given to my father, and my father had promised to me, you come back to Germany and it's yours. I wouldn't go back to Germany, so kept. But Aunt Gertrude got it, and she smuggled it out for me, and I've still got it yet. And it was hidden all during the war by my mother, and in fact, my mother had jewellery which was buried during the war, and she got it out when, you know, the war was finished. She got it back up, got my father's watch, and got her jewellery back, and she got the jewellery made into two rings. One was a solitaire diamond with stones either side, another was five in a row diamonds. And one was for my sister, one was for my wife, Betty. So when my sister died, the ring came to my wife, Betty, you know, so she got the two of them now. But where was it? Oh, it's the same watch that's given me now. In 1990, near the end of my service, I was wanting a contract in Outer Hebrides. I saw a letter in the Sunday Post asking anyone who knew anything about kinder transport to contact the person below. And coming home for a weekend, I phoned the number listed and spoke to Doris Sim.
Who started this?
Yes, she was instigator. Who was trying to arrange a get-together of kinder. Doris said she had a photo of some kinder which she would send to me to see if I could recognise anyone on it. When I received the photo, I was very surprised to find right in the front were my sister and myself. Oh. I was holding the hand of a young girl.
And where was that taken?
Waverley Station. Ah. I've got a copy there. Have you met Edith Forrester?
No, we're still hoping to go and meet her. She's in St Andrews, I think.
No, Kirkcaldy.
Kirkcaldy.
And Edith and I, we keep in touch. It's only Christmas cards, but put a letter in and give them the year's news, you know, every year. And the girl's hand I was holding was Edith Forrester.
Oh, goodness. Was she the only one that you really remember ever having had much contact with?
No, I didn't even know.
You didn't even know that was her name?
I didn't even know that photo had been taken.
Right. You know. Right. And so you only met Edith after
Doris Sim after got things organised.
Right.
Our first meeting of the kinder.
And right. You'd really never met any of them again since she came over?
No, never met any.
And did people you work with, did they know your background, or was there no cause for them to know that?
Well, I mean, by that time my name was Mackenzie. Uh-huh. You know, so, all right, in Forrest, they knew it. Oh, and the wee Jewish German boy, right? Yeah. That was in the town, that was it, you know. And, hello, Ebby, that was, nobody could say Eberhard Rosemeyer, so it was Ebby, was all I got, you know. And that was it, you know. I played with them, they played with me, and went out, I was in the air training corps, and in the squadron there and go down flying to Kinloss, and it was a case of, you go down on Wednesday, Abby. I'll try and get a half day off and away down we go, you know. But it was only the local crowd. Nobody seemed to bother about it. And I never met any other refugee.
Just one of the locals.
No, just... In fact, I make use of it now. Do you ever get these funny phone calls, you know? Am I inquiring for Mr. McKinsey? I would like to see you. And I just reply, I didn't care what you're saying, man. What do you care? I didn't care. I can't understand you. You know? Good one. The forest lingo. Phone down. So it's paid dividends. But as I say, there was a sister and myself, and I was holding the hand of a young girl, and that was Edith Forrester. It appears the photo had been taken when the children arrived at Waverley Station in Edinburgh on their way to Selkirk had been kept as a memento by one of the group. On 20th May 1990, the first get-together of Scottish kinder took place, and the four children in the photo met together for the first time since 1939. Since then, there have been regular annual gatherings of Scottish kinder held at various themes in Glasgow. Now, that's what... So I'll bring these photos down. Your tape's running a bit better. Let you see the photos after. Although I retired from government service in 91, I've been approached several times by consultants and agencies to take on various contracts. And I succumbed. I've taken on short-term contracts. The last being a contract with Glasgow University. But after retiring five times, I've now decided to stay permanently retired. I'm not sure my wife believes me. So I'd always wanted to have at least one visit to my old home before I got too old. And I knew my cousin Barbara had inherited the house in Newcastle when my mother died. This was a thank you for looking after my mother in her final days. In 55, I took a chance and wrote to the old address, hoping to get a reply. The letter we got back gave us an open invitation to come any time, and we would be made most welcome. So September 96, we took the car over to the continent, decided to do a month's tour, and include a visit to my old home. Took the overnight ferry from Hull to Rotterdam, and in the morning we hit the road. First night we got as far as Castle, and the following morning headed for Neukirchen. We swung off the autobahn and took the A road into Neukirchen. As we entered the town, I swung right, and only gone about 100 yards when I knew I was on the wrong road. After all these years, you know, it's just some trigger. I got out and asked local in my rusty German, "Wo ist der Bahnhof bitte?" "Where's the railway station, please?" So he told me to go back to the roundabout and turn right. And as soon as I was on that road, I knew exactly where I was, even after all these years. And we're about a mile and a half from my old home. I drove directly to it without another mistake. When we arrived, my cousin and her husband were waiting for us, along with several people who'd known me as a boy, and also some of the neighbours who'd known my parents. We'd intended to stay for perhaps a couple of days and then start touring, but my cousin insisted we stay longer. She took us to see another cousin with whom I used to play as a child, and also took us to meet my mother's sister, now living in Chemnitz. We also met some of the families living close by who'd known my parents, and one lady produced a school photo of herself, which included my sister, as they'd both been in the same class. It's surprising how the memory of childhood days sticks in one's mind. My cousin took us out on a tour of Neukirchen and pointed out various places, which I could remember. On one building, however, we disagreed. She pointed out the primary school and asked if I remember going to it. I told her it was not the school I'd gone to, as my primary school was up a lane beyond the church. But she insisted this was the only primary school in the town. Prior to leaving Neukirchen, a friend of my father's gave me a book on old Neukirchen, and there was a photo of my old primary school up the lane beyond the church, which is now part of a residential complex. After staying some time with my cousin, we decided to go and visit Prague, as we're so near. It was only about 4 hours' drive away. A beautiful city, well worth the extra mileage. We stayed for 4 days, could easily have stayed longer. On returning from Prague, we stayed with my cousin for a few days to celebrate her husband's birthday, and then set out to do some touring before heading home. One of the places we visited was the site of Buchenwald concentration camp. What an eerie experience. The whole campsite is surrounded by a belt of trees about a mile wide. The remains of the private railway station can still be seen, but prisoners arriving by the wagon load were herded from there to the camp itself. The main gate has been preserved, and now there's an information office on the site. One thing we noticed was at least the young generation had been made aware of the horrors as classes of schoolchildren were being guided around the campsite by teachers. So at least they're telling their younger generation about it.
Did you find out how your or why your father was released? Did you ever find that out?
When he came home, we got suitcases packed and off. So we never got a chance to find out why he was released. But on the time scale, when he disappeared, I worked out the time scale with Kristallnacht, and it appears he was one of the ones that's the 30,000 that were rounded up during Kristallnacht, and that was it, you know. But one thing we know, the younger generation have been made aware of the horrors as classes of school children were guided around by the teachers. When the Russians occupied the area, they built a lasting monument in the shape of a huge bell tower, which can be seen for miles around. As well as the tower, they also constructed a series of steps to the Street of Nations. This is the long street joining up three mass graves, and along the street there are monuments depicting the nations who supplied inmates for the camp. There's 19 monuments. So 19 nations supplied prisoners for the camp. It's peculiar how information, even after all the passing years, has come out of nowhere. During one of the annual gatherings of Kinder in August 2000, I saw a Kinder Transport newsletter with an announcement regarding a Dr. Nitsch trying to contact ex-chemists of children who had left in Kinder Transport for the UK. I emailed him. I was very interested about my family. When I sent him more details, he mailed me back to let me know that one of the men in his office, Mr. Rothstein, had been into Riesenstadt concentration camp with my father and grandfather. He also told me my grandfather had died in the camp on 18 December 1942. An 82-year-old man in the concentration camp. Had we known this, we could have been to visit Theresienstadt when we were in Prague in 96, as the camp is not far from Prague, and I believe all the records are still there, you know. Usually the Sarek meetings, used to get the Kinder newsletters, and used to get letters from all over the world. And one of the sad things about reading the newsletters, even at a period of time almost 60 years after the end of the war, and the freeing of the concentration camp inmates, there are still letters asking for information about people who have never been traced. These letters give details such as date of birth, name, last known abode, and asking if anyone knows of them or any relative who may be able to supply information on their whereabouts.
You think a lot of the people who came over to Scotland ended up going abroad?
Well, there appears to be. I mean, it's, you know, some of the ones I've talked to in Glasgow and said, well, we were in Glasgow, and then some of them disappeared and, you know, didn't know where they were. I was in touch with a chap in Florida, you know, and we've got friends in Canada, and she's trying to find out Canadian ones who've ended up with Kinder Transport and then came over to Canada. She says quite a lot of them as well. But one of the things that really sticks in my craw, and it annoys me, the United States, you know, the land of liberty and freedom, blah, 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 right? It's possible more children could have been saved and the United States had been willing to take part in the rescue mission. On the 9th of February 1939, a limited refugee bill was introduced in the US Senate by Robert F. Wagner. 5 days later, the same bill was introduced in the House of Representatives by N. Rogers. And the Wagner-Rogers Refugee Aid Bill called for the admission to the United States of 20,000 German refugee children under the age of 14, in addition to the normal immigration quota. Within 24 hours of the plan being made public, 4,000 American families had offered homes to these children. And many more offers of accommodation were received via radio station and newspapers. Unfortunately, after several months of debate, the bill was defeated in committee. You know, that could have been another 20,000 children could have been saved. Yeah. And that's just a lot. I can tell you, I've got to say,
know how they picked the children to go in the Kinder's transport? How was it that they found you, or do you think?
I've no idea. All I know is that my parents said, "You're going the train journey. There's a case. Go on it." Now, there's one of the chaps who used to be at Sarek, and I remember him saying he's on the disc there. He was about 15. And he spoke to somebody there and they said, "Look, you could be in trouble. Go home, tell your mother, pack your haversack." He says, "Just take essentials, nothing, none of your hobbies or stamp collection, just basic essentials. Get back here to get on that train." And he was on the train and he came over with us. But how he was, you know, how we were chosen, I have no idea. You know?
And you don't even know how it was that Mr. Mackenzie eventually took you and your sister. I know he was willing to take people, but it was just sheer chance it was you and your sister that
took. Could have been anybody. You know. It was just a case of the refugee committee, right, based in Edinburgh at that time.
And were they Jewish or mixed? Who were the committee?
I think they were mixed. But it was a conglomeration of I think it was somebody in the front here. See, there was a college debate on the 21st of November of various concerned groups involved met Home Secretary Dr. Sir Samuel Hoare. During discussion, he agreed to speed up documentation required for travel. Now, the various organisations had now been combined into the movement for the care of children from Germany. The movement promised to fund the whole operation and stated there would be no drain on the public purse. The funds would be found to guarantee £50, roughly £1,000 in today's money, for every child brought in this country by kinder transport. By the time the war started, it was estimated 10,000 children were brought in. Now, remember that gathering of the voices we were at? There was a young chap there near the door, I don't know who he was, and I gave him information about a lady who did a thesis on the funding for the kinder transport. And it's about that thick, you know. And I don't know whether they dug into it or not, but I can give you the details and you can maybe get it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's the University of London, mm-hmm. and she did this thesis for her PhD. And she really dug into it, detail, very, very close detail, you know.
Well, that would be useful. You sound so much like just an average Scots person. You really do. Do you think of yourself at all as German anymore?
No.
Not a bit. When did the changeover really happen?
I think when I was up in Forres, because I was accepted as part of the community there. Mr. McKenzie treated me as a son, and
hello, my dear. Can you stop for a cup of tea?
I'd.
5 minutes.
They didn't ask me some questions. I thought I was stopped. No, they said, no. Some more questions.
Couple questions.
Right.
I'll give you a second.
You can come in if you want to sit down.
Right. I'll just.
Should you get the tea ready?
Oh, that's good. Thank you.
No, it was... I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Mr. McKenzie treated me as a son, uh-huh. right? My sister's as a daughter. And I don't know what I sort of involved in the community in there, you know. I went to school, I played with the kids. They came up and played. We used to go down to Grant Park and play. We played football, we played cricket and all the rounders and all the rest of it. And then once I got a wee bit older, I joined the Air Training Corps, so I met the local lads, we were all together there. And to me, I was one of the community.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And that's just...
You obviously still really wanted to keep the connection with your mother and father.
Oh, yes.
So it's not as if you were forgetting your origins, but you still had moved over to being... British.
Yes.
Definitely.
I took on the British citizenship, and as I say, my way of thanking Mr. McKenzie for taking us in was to take his name, because he's no son's his own.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So I took his name, and looking back at it now, there's a possibility I could have upset my father, you know, upset him a bit, but giving up his name.
Just be glad that you were alive, I should imagine.
But I think they understood, because. They came through to visit us here and that, you know. And once I left Forest, I came down to Glasgow, worked in the shipyards down there. I was one of the crowd, you know,
yes.
One of the crowd. And then in the RAF, you know, you all bunch together, you all work together as a team. It's just, I'm one of the community.
Supposing your parents had been based in West Germany,
mm-hmm.
do you think you'd have gone back if that had been the case?
That is something I don't know. I've never given that a thought. It was just the fact that it was the Russians, and I'm afraid my ideas of uh-huh. Russian strictness and control was just not my idea of life. I don't think I could have been up with that, you know.
We've asked other people, what would you say was the high points of life here in Scotland for you? And any low points, what would you say that would be?
Only high point, I think, is meeting them as you see getting married.
That's a high point.
That is indeed a high point.
Low points, I can't think of any low points. I mean, it's, you know, we've been fortunate. We've had a good life. I've been I've had a decent job all my working days. Betty's had a decent job. We've had a comfortable life. Brought up two boys who are doing well for themselves. And
Six grandchildren,
yep.
Do the grandchildren, are they fascinated by this extra dimension in your life,
some are and some couldn't care less. Robert, the youngest boy, and his wife and three of the kids were through on Christmas, and I got Ruth to put on the, she's a wizard with a computer, and I says, Ruth, Robert is actually, he's an IT specialist, I says, Robert, I says, can I put some PowerPoint on my computer? He says, no, I says, Ruth or Ben will do it for you, you know, so Ruth put it on for me. And it's just well I asked her, because she struggled, and I wouldn't have a clue, you know. But she put it on, and it worked, that's fine. And then I played her the PowerPoint pictures, you know, and she was the same as you. Oh, what's that? And the Shul Tutti, that was something that fascinated her, you know. She's quite interested, you know. And the one down in Campbelltown, the eldest grandson down in Campbelltown, he's quite interested. But the rest of them, I don't know, she's running the mill, you know.
And were you glad to get to meet the kinder? I mean, you were obviously very quick to reply to Dorrie. Did you enjoy meeting others who had come in?
Oh, aye. I mean, that was the first chance I got, you know, because, as I say, I was working the Stornoway at the time, and I used to fly down at the weekend and fly back up on the Monday. And when she sent me the picture.
Where did I put that? Pictures.
It's here. Lying out on my feet and I can't see it. Do you want to switch this off and save you?
No, it's all right, because it's all right now, I think.
And there's the picture at the bottom of the page. That's the one that was taken at Waverley Station.
Oh, so is that you there?
I need my glasses.
Is that you there?
No, that's me there.
There,
and
right.
I'm holding Edith's hand.
Ah, right.
Right, right. That's Edith Forrester. Uh-huh. And that's my sister there.
Oh, right. Right. So that's, is it Isolde?
Isolde. Yep.
So that is him. Oh. You had a bit more hair then. Other than that.
Don't rub it in, please.
And that's the Forrester girl.
Forrester.
Amazing. And all of these people then are arriving at Waverley Station.
To go to Selkirk.
And what was in Selkirk?
It was the priory in Selkirk was a holding station.
For kinder?
Just for kinder. See, most of the people we've come across, they arrived in Liverpool Street in London, uh-huh, and came to Scotland various ways after that. So this is not the common experience.
Did you not go to Liverpool Street as well?
I've got a clue.
You don't know
the
that.
The only thing is, I know I arrived at Harwich, right? Because...
I think from Harwich you may well have been taken to Liverpool Street. So
there must have been a Scottish group who had already selected some children to be there.
There's the kinder houseways. Oh. That's what it looks like. I see the wee bit starting lost down at the bottom. There's a bigger view of the picture at Waverley Station.
Oh, that's a very good picture.
Did you ever find out if...
You've got a view there.
Right.
Hold on a minute.
That street. I'll
need you shift it.